Chapter 13. It, and that they preached up sedition, rebellion, and the like. This was proved so plain by these sublime distinctions, that they convicted themselves and their posterity of it, by a rare and newly acquired art, found out by extraordinary study, which proves the wonderful power of custom, insomuch that let any man by this method tell a lie over a certain number of times, he shall arrive to a satisfaction of its certainty, though he knew it to be a fiction before, and shall freely tell it for a truth all his life after. Thus the Priestarians were called the murderers of the Father, though they restored the Son, and all the testimonials of their sufferings, protests, and insurrections to prevent his death, signified nothing, for this method of distinguishing has that powerful charm in it, that all those trifles we call proofs and demonstration were of no use in that case. Custom brought the story up to a truth, and in an instant all the Crowleans were hooked in under the general name of Priestarians, at the same time, to hook all parties in the crime. Now as it happened at last, that these Salianarian gentlemen found it necessary to do the same thing themselves, viz. To lay aside their loyalty, depose, fight against, shoot bullets at, and throw bombs at their king till they frighted him away, and sent him abroad to beg his bread. The Crowleans began to take heart and tell them, now they ought to be friends with them, and tell them no more of rebellion and disloyalty. Nay, they carried it so far, as to challenge them to bring their loyalty to the test, and compare Crowleian loyalty and Salianarian loyalty together, and see who had raised more wars, taken up arms oftenest, or appeared in most rebellions against their kings. Nay, who had killed most kings, the Crowleans or the Salianarians, for there having been then newly fought a great battle between the Salianarian churchmen under their new prince, and the armies of foreign succors under their old king, in which their old king was beaten, and forked to fly a second time, the Crowleans told them that every bullet they shot at the battle was as much a murthering their king, as cutting off the head with a hatchet was a killing his father. These arguments in our world would have been unanswerable, but when they came to be brought to the test of lunar reasoning, alas, they signified nothing. They distinguished and distinguished till they brought the Priestarian war to be mere rebellion, king-killing, bloody and unnatural, and the Salianarian fighting against their king, and turning him adrift to seek his fortune, no prejudice at all to their loyalty, no, nor to the famous doctrine of passive obedience and absolute subjection. When I saw this, I really bewailed the unhappiness of some of our gentlemen in England, who standing exceedingly in need of such a wonderful dexterity of argument, to defend their share in our late revolution, and to reconcile it to their antecedent and subsequent conduct, should not be furnished from this more accurate world with the suitable powers, in order the better, to defend them against the banter and just raillery of their ill-natured enemies the Whigs. By this they might have attained suitable reserves of argument, to distinguish themselves out of their loyalty, and into their loyalty, as occasion presented to dismiss this prince, and entertain that, as they found it to their purpose. But above all, they might have learned a way, how to justify swearing to one king and praying for another, eating one prince's bread, and doing another prince's work, serving one king they don't love, and loving another they don't serve. They might easily reconcile the schisms of the church, and prove they are still loyal subjects to King James, while they are only forked bondsmen to the act of settlement, for the sake of that comfortable importance, call it food and raiment, and thus their reputation might have been salved, which is most unhappily tarnished and blurred, with the malicious attacks of the Whigs on one hand, and the nonjurants on the other. These tax them, as above, with rebellion by their own principles, and contradicting the doctrine of passive submission and non-resistance, by taking up arms against their prince, calling in a foreign power, and deposing him. They charge them with killing the Lord's anointed, by shooting at him at the Boyne, where if he was not killed it was his own fault, at least his plane was none of theirs. On the other hand, the non-jurant clergy charge them with schism, declare the whole Church of England schismatics, and breakers off from the general union of the Church, in renouncing their allegiance, and swearing to another power, their former prince being yet alive. 'Tis confessed all the answers they have been able to make to these things are very weak and mean, unworthy men of their rank and capacities, and 'tis pity they should not be assisted by some kind communication of these lunar arguments and distinctions, without which, and till they can obtain which, a conforming Jacobite must be the absurdest contradiction in nature. A thing that admits of no manner of defense, no, not by the people themselves, and which they would willingly abandon, but that they can find no side to join with them. The dissenting Jacobites have some plea for themselves, for let their opinion be never so repugnant to their own interest, or general vogue, they are faithful to some thing, and they won't join with these people, because they have perjured their faith, and yet pretend to adhere to it at the same time. The conforming Whigs won't receive them, because they pretend to rail at the government they have sworn to, and espouse the interest they have sworn against, so that these poor creatures have but one way left them, which is to go along with me, next time I travel to the moon, and that will most certainly do their business. For when they come down again, they will be quite another sort of men. The distinctions, the power of argument, the way of reasoning, they will be then furnished with will quite change the scene of the world with them. They'll certainly be able to prove they are the only people, both in justice, in politics and in prudence, that the extremities of every side are in the wrong. They'll prove their loyalty preserved, untainted. Throw all the swearings, fightings, shootings and the like, and nobody will be able to come to the test with them, so that upon the whole, they are all distracted, if they don't go up to the moon for illumination, and that they may easily do in the next consolidator. But as this is a very long digression, and for which I am to beg my reader's pardon, being an error I slipped into from my abundant respect to these gentlemen, and for their particular instruction, I shall endeavor to make my reader amends, by keeping more close to my subject. To return therefore to the historical part of the Salianarian churchmen, in the world in the moon. Having as is related deposited their king, and placked the crown upon the head of the prince, that came to their assistance, a new scene began all over the kingdom. 1. A terrible and bloody war began through all the parts of the lunar world, where their banished prince and his new ally had any interest, and the new king having a universal character over all the northern kingdoms of the moon, he brought in a great many pent kings, princes, emperors, and states, to take part with him, and so it became the most general war that had happened in those ages. I did not trouble myself to inquire into the particular successes of this war, but at what a more particular regard to the country from whence I came, and for whose instruction I have designed these sheets, the strife of parties, the internal feuds at home, and their analogy to ours, and whatever is instructively to be deduced from them, was the subject of immediate inquiry. No sooner was this prince placed on the throne, but according to his promises to them that invited him over, he convened the estates of the realm, and giving them free liberty to make, alter, add or repeal, all such laws as they thought fit, it must be their own fault, if they did not establish themselves upon such foundation of liberty, and right, as they deserved. For he gave them their full swing, never interposed one negative upon them for several years, and let them do almost everything they pleased. This full liberty had like to have spoiled it all, for as is before noted, this nation had one unhappy quality they could never be broke of, always to be falling out one among another. The Crolians, according to capitulation, demanded the full liberty and toleration of religion, which the Salianarians had conditioned with them for, when they drew them off from joining with the old king, and when they promised to come to a temper, and to be brethren in peace and love ever after. Nor were the Salianarian churchmen backward, either to remember, or perform the conditions, but by the consent of the king, who had been by agreement made guarantee of their former stipulations, an act was drawn up in full form, and as complete, as both satisfied the desires of the Crolians, and testified the honesty and probity of the Salianarians, as they were abstractedly and moderately considered. During the whole reign of this king, this union of parties continued without any considerable interruption. There was indeed brooding mischiefs which hovered over every accident, in order to generate strife, but the candor of the prince, and the prudence of his ministers, kept it under for a long time. At last an occasion offered itself, which gave an unhappy stroke to the nation's peace. The king threw innumerable hazards, terrible battles and a 12 years' war, had reduced his powerful adversary to such a necessity of peace, that he became content to abandon the fugitive king, and to own the title of this warlike prince, and upon these, among various other conditions, very honorable for him, and his allies, and by which vast conquests were surrendered, and disgorged to the losers, a peace was made to the universal satisfaction of all those parts of the moon that had been involved in a tiresome and expensive war. This peace was no sooner made, but the inhabitants of this unhappy country, according to the constant practice of the plots, fell out in the most horrid manner among themselves, and with the very prince that had done all these great things for them. And I cannot forget how the old gentleman I had these relations from, being once deeply engaged in discourse with some senators of that country, and hearing them reproach the memory of that prince from whom they received so much, and on the foot of whose gallantry and merit the constitution then subsisted, it put him into some heat, and he told them to their faces that they were guilty both of murder and ingratitude. I thought the charge was very high, but as they returned it upon him, and challenged him to make it out, he answered he was ready to do it, and went on thus. His Majesty, said he, left a quiet, retired, completely happy condition, full of honor, beloved of his country, valued, and esteemed, as well as feared by his enemies, to come over hither at your own request, to deliver you from the encroachments and tyranny, as you call it, of your prince. Ever since he came hither, he has been your mere journeyman, your servant, your soldier of fortune. He has fought for you, fatigued and harassed his person, and robbed himself of all his peace for you. He has been in a constant hurry, and run through a million of hazards for you. He has conversed with fire and blood, storms at sea, camps, and trenches ashore, and given himself no rest for 12 years, and all for your use, safety, and repose. In requital of which, he has been always treated with jealousies, and suspicions, with reproaches, and abuses of all sorts, and on all occasions, till the ungrateful treatment of the Salianarians eat into his very soul, turned it with serving an unthankful nation, and absolutely broke his heart, for which reason I think him as much murdered as his predecessor was, whose head was cut off by his subjects. I could not, when this was over, but ask the old gentleman what was the reason of his exclamation, and how it was the people treated their prince upon this occasion. He told me it was a grievous subject, and a long one, and too long to rehearse, but he would give me a short abridgment of it, and not to look back into his wars, in which he was abominably ill-served, his subjects constantly ill-treated him in giving him supplies too late, that he could not get into the field, nor forward his preparations in time to be ready for his enemies, who frequently were ready to insult him in his quarters. By giving him sham taxes and funds, that raised little or no money, by which he having borrowed money of his people by anticipation, the funds not answering, He contracted such vast debts as the nation could never pay, which brought the war into disrepute, sunk the credit of his exchequer, and filled the nation with murmurs and complaint. By betraying his counsel and well-laid designs to his enemies, selling their native country to foreigners, retarding their navies and expeditions, till the enemies were provided to receive them, betraying their merchants and trade, spending vast sums to fit out fleets, just time enough to go abroad, and do nothing, and then get home again. But as these were too numerous evils, and too long to repeat, the particular things he related to in his discourse, were these that follow. There had been a hasty peace concluded with a furious and powerful enemy. The king foresaw it would be of no continuance, and that the demise of a neighboring king, who by all appearance could not live long, would certainly embroil him again. He saw that prince keep up numerous legions of forces, in order to be in a posture to break the peace with advantage. This the king fairly represented to them, and told them the necessity of keeping up such a force, and for such a time, at least as might be necessary to awe the enemy from putting any affront upon them in case of the death of that prince, which they daily expected. The party who had all along maligned the prosperity of this prince, took fire at the offer, and here began another state plot, which though it hooked in two or three sets of men for different ends, yet altogether joined in affronting and ill-treating their prince, upon this article of the army. The nation had been in danger enough from the designs of former princes invading their privileges, and putting themselves in a posture to tyrannize by the help of standing forces, and the party that first took fire at this proposal, though the very same men who in the time of an Abragratzian prince were for caressing him, and giving him thanks for his standing army, as has been noted before, were the very people that began the outcry against this demand, and so specious were the pretenses they made, that they drew in the very Crolians themselves upon the pretense of liberty and exemption from arbitrary methods of government to oppose their king. It grieved this good prince to be suspected of tyrannic designs, and that by a nation who he had done so much, and ventured so far to save from tyranny and standing armies, 'twas in vain he represented to them the pressing occasion. In vain he gave them a description of approaching dangers, and the threatening posture of the enemy's armies. In vain he told them of the probabilities of renewing the war, and how keeping but a needful force might be a means of preventing it. In vain he proposed the subjecting what force should be necessary to the absolute power, both as to time and number of their own cortes or national assembly. It was all one, the design being formed in the breasts of those who were neither friends to the nation, nor the king. Those reasons which would have been of force in another case, made them the more eager. Bitter reflections were made on the king, and scurrilous lampoons published upon the subject of tyrants, and governing by armies. Nothing could be more ungrateful to a generous prince, nor could anything more deeply affect this king, than whom none ever had a more genuine, single-hearted design for the people's good. But above all, like Caesar in the case of Brutus, it heartily moved him to find himself pushed at by those very people whom he had all along seen, pretending to adhere to his interest, and the public benefit, which he had always taken care should never be parted, and to find these people join against this proposal, as a design against their liberties, and as a foundation of tyranny, heartily and sensibly afflicted him. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.